FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and the date is September 28th, 2016. So, Deutsche Bank keeps sinking. Hillary Clinton sinking. Does that mean that the establishment, the powers that be, are sinking along with them? Well, that's an interesting question for which Andrew Hoffman is on with us now. And just remember, you want to send an email, whatever, kl@kerrylutz.com. Andy, so hello there. How are you?
I'm exhausted, Kerry. It's been a crazy week. You know, we listed all the dozens of events going on of import, starting with the debate on Monday night, which we'll talk about. And of course, throughout the week, we had the Algiers oil meeting, which was a gigantic failure. And of course, Deutsche Bank and many other things. Next week is the SDR, you know, inclusion of China and the Jubilee year. And we'll get a date for the Italian referendum and et cetera, et cetera. So there's so many things going on, and unfortunately, none of them are good. And I'm not even sure where we want to start first.
Well, Deutsche Bank's probably as good a place as any, because that's really dominating the headlines. And it's a real case of the banksters have no money, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Your question was, are the powers that be declining with Deutsche Bank? Of course they are. I wrote years ago an article called Last to Go. I talked about, quote, last to go markets, which in my mind are the Dow Jones propaganda average and paper, gold and silver. I mean, these are the two things that are the most necessary for them to protect from a perception point of view. If they lose one, they lose everything. If they lose both, they lose everything very quickly. And so that's why no matter, you know, you look at all of the incredibly horrible news, to see the Dow barely move lower on the news that Deutsche Bank is in fact likely to go bankrupt and take the whole world with it, shows you just how terrified they are and how desperate and how obvious it is. Because again, it's not like the rest of the world stock markets are going up. It's not like commodity markets are going up. It's not like currencies are going up. Nothing's going up. And as we saw, in fact, yesterday I started my article not with Deutsche Bank for once, but with the failed Algiers meeting. You know, the Fed does their thing. They pretend that they're going to have a rate hike and then they don't do it. And the same thing goes with OPEC. They always pretend that they're going to be cutting production. And I keep saying, just like I say, the Fed's never going to raise rates, I say they're never going to cut production. They can't. And again, I worked in the oil market for 10 years. I was an oil field service analyst at Solomon Smith Barney. I know how OPEC works. There's no such thing as OPEC anymore. There's Saudi Arabia. That's it.
Yeah.
They're the only country in the world that has any ability to adjust its production. The problem is that now, just like the fracking companies, they are completely, utterly broke. That's why, while it's comical, they're talking about, and now they're not even talking about production cuts like back in my day. They talk about production freezes. It's like, yeah, Let's hurry up and get record production this month, and then we'll talk about a production freeze. I've never even heard of this production freeze. It wouldn't matter. You can't freeze at a record level when you have high inventory and falling demand and think it'll matter. But again, they can't do that. The headlines that we're looking at the same time are Saudi Arabia cuts all the salaries of its government workers. Saudi Arabia's central bank bails out its banks because the interbank funding rates are soaring. Saudi Arabia prepares for new debt deals because they need money. And you think that in a world where market share is everything, they're going to cut production and reduce their cash? Well, of course not. And then you have problem is that all the, you know, back in my day, again, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, all the OPEC countries were not broke as opposed to now. So now they all are in the same boat. They all need money. And Iran is saying, well, I want an exemption, or the U.S. made my production go down. Nigeria says, I want an exemption. The rebels stopped my production. And Venezuela says, we're having hyperinflation. I want an exemption. And Iraq says, well, we're always in the middle of war. We want an exemption. So, again, people, there's not a chance in hell that there's ever going to be a production cut. There will never be a production freeze either. So that's off the table. And again, you know, it ends with Saudi Arabian oil minister says he has hope there'll be a production freeze at the November meeting, which is just like what the Fed does when they go, we're going to have a rate hike in September. The case is strengthened and Stanley Fisher says so and everyone says so. And then they don't do it. But now they'll be like, oh, but maybe in December we're thinking about doing it. So, I mean, these are the kind of things, you know, we're down to desperate propaganda in every way, shape and form. Hold the Dow up, hold gold down and keep making up ridiculous, credibility destroying statements across the board. And again, the powers that be are going down because look at the currencies around the world. Look at the commodities around the world. Look at the political regime changes. We could do a whole show just on the political regime change possibilities for this fall.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we certainly could do that, but we won't. But briefly touching upon it, so we had our first master debate, or as Howard Stern would call them, master debaters. And, you know, but this is a family show, so I'll try to keep it clean. But what happened there, Andy? What was your take on it all?
You know, the sad thing is that people don't remember when Howard Stern ran for governor of New York back in 1992, was it? 94?
Yeah, and Pataki finally, through Al D'Amato, convinced him not to run. And that's why he didn't. But his platform was basically one thing only. I'm going to do all road work at night, so it's not going to screw up the traffic.
Two things. And he wanted to reinstate the death penalty.
Oh, okay, right.
Those are his two platforms.
Yes, you're correct. Yes.
So. And you know what? After that time, they stopped doing road work at night, even though he didn't get in. And by the way, you know, talk about Howard Stern, who's one of my heroes and so many careers he's spawned. He spawned George Pataki's career. George Pataki was his running mate. George Pataki came out of nowhere. And as a result, George Pataki became a big political figure in New York because of him. But anyway, what I was saying is, you know, Howard Stern's actually one of the few good debaters out there. And he isn't even a politician. When it came to this debate, huge amount of expectations, certainly the highest watched debate ever. And, you know, it was a big, I guess you can look at it many ways. From an entertainment standpoint, it was a big flop. I mean, not really a lot went on for all the hype about it. The way I did it, and everyone should listen, I did a podcast that was 30 minutes long yesterday called A Trump Victory Equals Brexit Times 10. I basically rated Hillary an F and Trump a C. And I said, but in today's manipulated media market and, you know, that equates it for an A for Hillary Clinton and a D for Trump. Let's face it. She was absolutely pitiful. It is. I was saying, you know, I voted in previous elections. I've always voted just because I hated people. I wanted Gore to lose. I wanted George Bush to lose, McCain, Mitt Romney, and Obama. I wanted them all to lose, so I voted against them. And I'm thinking any one of those people has so much more charisma and believability than Hillary Clinton. I mean, when I see that smirk on her face every time Trump talks, I feel like I'm watching Judge Judy, where, you know, the person saying, you know, it was a gift, not a loan. And the other person is trying to, like, give a dumb look on their face like he's lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's what it seemed like. She's a little brat. She just throws out these ridiculous lies. She says things that incriminate herself, you know, about the Russians were hacking the DRC's email. Said, you know, A, you have no proof of that. And B, the DRC's emails incriminate you. Why are you talking about it, you moron? So,
So do you think it was just that Trump was unprepared, or is he just keeping his powder dry for the one that's really going to count?
Well, I think he was unprepared. And the way I put it was, you know, the way he usually wins everything in life, certainly in the, you know, when he's talking about confrontations, is he just wins with wit and intimidation. And I said, that's fine in the primaries because you're going up against a bunch of nobodies. But here you're going up against, you know, you're in the home stretch. You're going up against a powerful candidate with unlimited money who is also, you know, the consummate politician as far as she will say anything and do anything to get elected. You can't go in there with this cavalier attitude. I mean, either attack violently or come in with facts. And he really didn't do either, as far as I'm concerned. He definitely related to the people better than she doesn't relate to anyone. She just says, I'm going to tax the wealthy. I'm going to whatever that means. And
let
he
them
makes
pay
some
their
points,
fair
but
share.
he was a bit long winded and I think he needs to correct it. But he was definitely better than she was.
Yeah. Well, you know, it just was pretty amazing to watch the whole thing unfold. Yeah, I wasn't impressed by her, but, you know, I have to admit I am prejudiced, can't stand her. But interesting things like you said, she just kind of lied her way through it and didn't think twice about it. But that's the kind of behavior you come to expect from her, right?
Right, but the point is she wasn't called out on it. I mean, no. Yeah, I mean, he's doing a few things here, yeah. But he could have attacked her so viciously and without being mean about it, just calling her out on things. Factually. I mean, when she's calling him a liar with all the lies that she put, I mean, I would have had a field day, but he, you know, maybe he was lying low. We'll see. He's got two more debates.
I think he's lying low, honestly. I don't think he's the best debater, but he was also projecting an image, if you will.
Yeah.
And the optics is more important than the message. Okay.
When it comes down to it, he's been gaining momentum in the polls. If you read any of the exit polls, they said that he won. I mean, he didn't win decisively, but he won. And again, this is not about, you know, what happens at a debate. The people are going to vote him in.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the forest gets lost in the trees when everyone's analyzing this, particularly when you look at the mainstream media, you got Lester Holt.
Forget it.
And all these guys, I saw one thing, Fox News suicidal because Trump got trounced by Clinton. They just make this stuff up. The fact is, people are angry. That's why they voted for the Brexit. That's why they voted for Catalonian secession, the Greek oxy. That's why they're going to vote out the Italian prime minister in November. That's why they're going to vote out Merkel and Holland and Rajoy in Spain in the coming months. That's why they're going to vote in Trump. They don't care about this debate.
Yep. Yep. And neither of them were master debaters. So, you know, that's what you got to keep in mind here, that in the scheme of things, this is doesn't mean anything. It just means.
Keep in mind, you know, the election is what, 6 or 8 weeks away? Who not? I can't keep count anymore.
Yeah, it's like six, but yeah.
5 or 6 weeks. A lot's going to happen in those 5 or 6 weeks. And none of them are going to be good for the status quo, because what it comes down to, and the reason. Mm-hmm. My audio blog was titled "The Trump Victory Equals Brexit Times 10. I'm not the first one to say it, but I've been saying all along, I mean, this is the most important election ever because it's the status quo against everything else. I even said in my audio blog, I said even the breakup of the European Union pales in comparison to me to the global perception of a significant decline in U.S. hegemony. Forget the dollar.
Yeah.
This U.S. hegemony, once people realize that the U.S. is a paper tiger, it's a paper tiger financially, militarily, economically, people are going to all of a sudden say, why are we considering the U.S. a safe haven of really anything? And look where it's going politically, because when Trump wins, it's not good or bad necessarily for the country. It just means that those that have been pulling the strings that have put the U.S. at the top and then, of course, subsequently, taking it down are done. I mean, I said Hillary Clinton is the last remaining heir. You know, she's like the last Mohican.
There's no one else out there. Joe Biden, but he's kind of a joke, a laughing stock. So you really couldn't.
Well, he's 74 years old and doesn't want to be president. I mean, there's really the current powers that be, call them the Clintons and Bushes, and it is Clintons and Bushes, because my God, George Bush Sr., he's endorsing Clinton. Oh God, was he nuts? What, because she insulted Jeb Bush?
Yeah, I know. Right? It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's done, we're going to have a new era here. It doesn't mean it's good or bad necessarily, but it's definitely going to be the biggest drop in standards of living of any country that's ever existed. I'm not saying the U.S. is going to go from the first world to the third world, but I'm saying for the average American, we're going to see the standard of living decline more than any country's ever exist in history. And again, we're talking about a country that has no savings, no manufacturing, more debt than everyone else combined, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And, it's going to be a pretty scary time. And I think when Trump wins, because he's going to win, it's going to shock the world into realizing the U.S. is no longer the leader. And maybe, you know, Rickard's talking about the SDR with China gaining power in the monetary world, et cetera, is another step in that direction. But the fact is, it's not going to be long. Forget the dollar. It's not going to be long before the whole world realizes the U.S. is no longer this big superpower. It's just not.
Yeah. Well, I think the word is out. But for right now, there's nothing better So they're kind of putting up with it. But how much longer that situation will continue, anybody's guess here, Ann, but probably not much longer. You don't have to be psychic to figure that one out. And yeah, I mean, it's the bloom is off the rose. I mean, once upon a time, the U.S. was held in such high esteem and regard by the world. And those days, I'm afraid, are rapidly coming to an end if they're not done already.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the political things that are going on in the world. I mean, people, there's just so much stuff going on that people are just ignoring, which is, I mean, cataclysmic. I mean, brother, look at this Wells Fargo. I mean, it's incredible. But the thing that really gets me the most, to me, the biggest news events that are going on right now are the political wars. You know, you look at the Chinese snubbing Obama at the meeting in China, in which China is now the president of the G20. You look at this, you know, it started with Apple, right? You know, the European Union, they're desperate for cash. They couldn't care less about the United States. They say, Apple, you know, enough with your tax loopholes. Give us $14 billion, which, again, for Apple is no big deal. But it is a big deal from a precedent setting, because if they have to pay it, then everyone's going to have to pay, you know, hundreds of billions of taxes. And it's going to, you know, change the it's kind of like a protective tariff. It's going to, you know, reduce the globalism and reduce the ability to freely trade around the world. It's going to constrict trade. So what does the U.S. do in return? Not only do they fine, you know, Deutsche Bank pretty much the same amount of money, exactly $14 billion, but they in picking Deutsche Bank, they're, you know, Apple is perhaps the strongest company in America. Deutsche Bank is the weakest company in Europe. So it's kind of like an act of political war, aside from monetary war. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the same time, you see the Fed is announcing that they may step up what you need to do for a stress test to pass them. It almost makes you think that they are trying to take the system down, because, and then yesterday, you know, this is what I'm talking about, a week after they started the whole Deutsche Bank thing rolling, and Deutsche Bank is going to go bankrupt. I wrote it back in June, and I'm more positive about it than ever. I mean, we're, in fact, you know, the CEO had his Lehman moment last night when he said, oh, everything's fine. We have plenty of liquid assets, which is just what Lehman's CEO said right before they crashed. But, you know, anyway, yesterday, we're talking about a week after the U.S. did this, Department of Justice. Now they're going after Volkswagen. And good. OK, I mean, Volkswagen is the most despicable manufacturing company in the world. I hope they go bankrupt for what they've done. And the scary thing is we're finding out that so many other car companies have done the same thing. But anyway, here was the quote. This came from Bloomberg, that Bloomberg sources said that Department of Justice is seeking to get as large of a criminal fine out of Volkswagen for the admissions cheating as they can without putting them out of business, which would be a pretty big number for Volkswagen. So the point is, I mean, it's not just now an act of political warfare. It sounds like it's an act of political warfare on Germany specifically, who supposedly is our big ally. And what is Germany going to do in retaliation, right? We got plenty of weak companies. You know, what is the European Union going to do in general, let alone now the European Union is going after the UK? Like, they're not going to let them go gently. They want to make them feel the pain, which in turn will make them feel pain. What about the monetary wars that Japan just started? What is China going to do now that it's part of this strategic currency basket? And what will the United States do when Trump wins? What will Janet Yellen do knowing that her job is on the line in the next few months? I mean, there's a lot of really bad things. And the thing is, while all this is happening, the global economy is collapsing. Oil prices are collapsing. The status quo is collapsing. And again, you know, we talk about these political regime changes. Does anyone seem to care that Catalonia, here was the timeline, right? Remember last right. November, they had this vote where 95% of the people voted to secede. And they said, their leadership said, we would like to secede by the end of 2016, which was a bit ambitious. But hey, that's their goal. So what happens in, I think it was in June of this year, they had elections and they formally elected a parliament that wants to secede. And then 3 months later, in August or something, they formally voted to secede. I mean, Catalonia leaving Spain would be like bigger than California leaving the United States. Yeah. And this is, Spain is one of the worst financed nations in the whole country. In fact, they're going to have their third presidential election in a year in the next month because they can't form a government because the Podemos party, all these anti-EU parties, are gaining popularity. Then you have it in Italy. We're going to learn next week what the date of the referendum is. I mean, the pro-EU prime minister, who, by the way, is the fourth prime minister since the financial crisis, is going to have to resign over it. And this says, remember, Bank Montepaschi was going to be bailed out? Well, they're not going to be bailed out. Now they can't get their funding. UniCredit's falling apart. The whole Italian banking system may fall apart by year end. If Deutsche Bank goes, then the whole European system and everything else goes with it. So these are the things that the powers that be are contending with while all the political regimes are changing. So there's just too many balls to juggle. And that's why, shortly there's going to be a shocking event. I'm not sure if it'll be Deutsche Bank or something else, which will blow the thing to kingdom come. And when that occurs, there will go the end of the last to go market manipulations as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, at some point, the charade's got to end. The scam has to finish. Because what happens with a Ponzi scheme is they go great in the beginning, but then when you run out of suckers, eventually the thing collapses of its own weight. And I think we're at the end here where there's just no more suckers left and everybody has been fleeced. So now it's time to pay the piper. But guess what? Whether it's your pension plan, your public pension plan, if you're in the union, the Teamsters pension plan, we can go down the list. But all of these promises, all of these things that you've been expecting to happen, and you might even have been paid out by your pension plan for the past 10 years and think it'll go on forever. Wrong. You better think again, because once the door is shut, it's shut. There's no more new suckers entering the system, and then the old suckers figure it out, and then the system goes.
Right. And that's why that's where we're at. And that's why I've called the current global fiat regime the largest, most destructive fiat Ponzi scheme in history. I mean, that's exactly what the definition is. Mm-hmm. And you talk about pension plans. Again, too many things for me to even in my crazy mind where I got everything circulating to process them all at once. Do people have any idea how underfunded the world's pensions are? I mean, we're talking about the average pension plan around the world, which is on average underfunded already, some by ridiculous amounts of money, which make them pretty much insolvent, especially when you have like the Pension Benefit Guarantee Company corporation here in America, completely insolvent itself. The average pension fund is assuming, I think, a 7.5% rate of return. This is with 15 trillion or so of sovereign bonds trading at negative yields. This is with all-time high stock valuations in the worst possible economy ever. We're talking about we're going to now have six quarters in a row of even rigged our earnings going down. And the highest ever valuations, higher stock multiples than the 2000.com bubble, higher multiples than by far than the 2007-2008 bubble. And they're expecting 7.5% returns. I mean, that's how much these pension funds are going to have to be written down. We're not talking about hundreds of billions. We are talking about tens of trillions just in the pension fund. And that's why when you see the Bank of Japan last week with this, I mean, I called it Mad Frankenstein experiment. This, QQE, meaning quantitative qualitative easing with yield control, curve control. They can't control anything. It doesn't. First of all, if you raise long term rates because you're trying to steepen the yield curve, that's going to destroy everyone even quicker because of all the losses on high duration bonds. But the thing that's so comical is, you know what's happened since, as I said it would? Well, one, the yen is surging higher. It's about to break below 100, which is a big psychological level. And two, the Japanese yield curve is flattening again because everyone knows that they're going to do a complete QE and just buy every bond in sight, which, of course, in turn is going to make yields go even more negative, which will cause the focus on pension fund underfunding to get even larger. So, again, it's kind of like, the end of the Ponzi scheme. There's nowhere to hide. The Fed can't say anymore. Fed can't do anymore. None of these central banks can do anymore. Now they're losing control of the politicians who have been running the show. Once the Clintons are out of office and David Cameron is out of office and Holland and soon to be Mario Draghi and Shinzo Abe and all these guys, you're going to be left with populists. Some of them may be good people with good intentions, and a lot of them may be, you know, despots and Hitler-like in the worst case scenarios. You just never know, but it's not going to be good because they're all going to come around during bad times, and during bad times, bad things happen. Starting with, of course, the loss of control of financial markets, starting with precious metals, which are one of the smallest markets in the world, with declining production, all-time record high demand. There's no inventories out there. And, you know, I mean, I'm far more scared about what's going to happen than I am excited. I'm exhausted from 15 years of reporting about this stuff. I've done all I can personally to protect myself. I've done all I can to help tell people what they should do. And for a lot of people, it's too late. But for, you know, there's still people out there, many people in the Western world that can still do things. And I can't believe anyone could look around at what they're seeing and not do things.
Yeah. Hey, well, I think that's why people really are voting for Trump in numbers much higher, I believe, than what the polls are reflecting.
It's going to be a landslide.
Yeah, in Florida, Melbourne, that's the Space Coast, 15,000 people in a hangar with another 12,000 that couldn't get in. All right. And Hillary can't fill a union hall. I mean, what's with that? So, you know, you can see that there's much, much angst and much just people are just saying, hey, we're cooked. We're screwed. What have we got to lose by voting for Trump? That was his outreach to the African-American public. But I think that's the outreach to all Americans. Like, hey, we're headed down the tubes. So you know what you're going to get with Hillary. You know, give it a shot here. You got nothing to lose.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, like she, one of her things, she goes, oh, you have no plan. I'm going, and you do? What's your plan? What plan have you ever... You haven't even said I'm Obama's plan. You just say, I want to be president because I'm a woman and I'm a Clinton. Yeah. So make me the president. Right. But, you know, the one thing she says is like her plan is I want to get rid of the minimum wage and I want to tax the wealthy. And I'm going, do you really think all these poor people are sitting here thinking, oh, thank God she's going to raise the minimum wage? Right. Yeah. First of all, by now, anyone who's working strictly on the minimum wage realizes that most employers are cutting hours as a result. And they're definitely cutting full time employees and they're definitely cutting benefits. So having a higher minimum wage has far more negatives than positives. And then again, when you think about the money involved, let's say you work 40 hours a week. Right. And you're on the minimum wage. I don't call it $10 an hour. So you're making $400 pre-tax, which I mean, it's poverty. Okay. So what if they made it from $10 to $12? So you get $80 a week pre-tax more. I mean, do you really think, Hillary, that you're going to get like tens of millions of votes because the prospect of maybe, and that's if you work full time, of getting like $50 a week? Yeah. Extra? Of course not. It's ridiculous. And when, you know, the whole thing about, well, minorities will vote for her because they always vote Democrat. I'm going, you know, look at all that's going on, all the race tensions, ironically, with a black president, right, going on everywhere, all these Charlotte and or Dallas and all these places everywhere. You know, do you really think that there's people out there going, yeah, you know, I'm black, I'm Latino, I'm going to vote for Hillary because she's Democrat, because she's going to be better for me than someone else. I mean, what has any Democrat ever done for a black person more or less than what a Republican has done, let alone her, who's like who typifies, you know, the white elite privileged. And it's, you know, to believe going into a debate that if I just pander to poor people and black people, that they're going to vote for me. It's ridiculous. They are the people who feel the most disenfranchised. And last I looked, it was the Obama administration, in which she was a major part of it for the last 8 years, that has been in charge. So I think that people like myself, and you know, when you listen to my audio blog that I did yesterday, and even I surprise myself when I listen to get it. You know, I do it in a methodic way, but the hatred that I have, I don't think I've ever honestly carried. I don't know if I've ever had more hatred for a public figure than her. I really have concentrated. I think about my personal experience, which compared to everyone else is so much better. When I think of just in my professional life, dealing with the gold cartel, who literally it's hard for me not to say that they've ruined my life. I'm not sure that I could ever get back. I know I can't get back the 15 years that they stole from me. And I don't know if I'll ever mentally recover what they've taken from me. And that's just one aspect of my life. But when I think of what they've done to millions, billions of people around the world with collaborating with the Fed and the central banks on destroying the value of money and taking interest rates down and the draconian regulations and the police state that they've created all in the name of a handful of people getting rich, and including them. I mean, Hillary Clinton's worth like $200 million. Now when the Clintons went to the office, they're worth nothing. They got it all
flat
from
broke.
Stealing.
They were flat
stealing
broke.
From people.
Yeah, flat broke. Well, hey, that's the system we have, which has nothing to do with the governed. And I think we'll have to leave it at that, Andy. So, hey, let's see. Deutsche Bank's on borrowed time. Let's see what happens next week. Make sure you go check out Andy's blog, sign up for his daily missives and his frequent audio blogs over at milesfranklin.com and come over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Love to have you there. Dozens of articles every day dealing with these very topics. Sign up for our newsletter. Got one going out today. And Andy, we will catch up with you next week.
Looking forward to it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.